Welcome to Move Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Clapson. The aim of this podcast is to explore, learn, and spread the message of rewilding and natural movement so that we as humans can live in more alignment with our nature and reclaim what it means to be fully alive. The modern world has stripped away so much that used to nourish our mind, body, and soul. This podcast will help illuminate how we can reclaim and restore our innate, wild, capable, and strong spirit. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Hey, hey, welcome back to another epic episode of Move Wild Podcast. So today I have the pleasure of sharing a conversation that I recorded with my friend Josh from the Bush Tannery. Josh is such a legend, and it was great to connect with him again after not having seen him for a couple of years. So much of what he said in this interview resonated with me on a very deep level and also inspired me. His energy and passion was contagious. So Josh McLean is a traditional tanner and public health practitioner living on Gulidjan country in the Otways in southwest Victoria. With a master's in public health and currently finishing his master's of social work, Josh is passionate about preventative holistic health and nature-based practices. He's the owner and operator of the Bush Tannery. He has made appearances at such events such as the Lost Trades Fair and taught countless workshops, the ancient art, based around the ancient art of tanning over the past 5 years. In his free time, you will catch him pottering around his home workshop, sipping cups of tea and listening to various recordings on human behavior and consciousness. So let's jump into this episode and I'll catch you on the other side as to how you can connect with me and how you can connect with Josh.
So welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, Josh.
Yeah, it's really great to chat to you again, Jake. It's been a couple of years since we last caught up, and you've been pretty busy.
Yeah, man. It sounds like you've been pretty busy as well. Yeah, I've definitely been busy, and it's good to catch up again for sure. So to start with, I always like to get the backstory of the guests that are coming on. So what is your story and journey in relation to how you got into all that you do today, rewilding, nature connection, tanning, primitive skills?
Yeah, that's a question that I think we could answer for the whole podcast. I'll try and keep it short. I guess really influenced by Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces. You might have heard it as The Hero's Journey. And mythology was kind of the lens and language by which I feel like I accessed something beyond my known village. Like, before I understood what permaculture was, or what does it mean to be sustainable, or how to even be a human being. And I found myself like 250 km inside the Arctic Circle in Lapland in Sweden, and I knew that I had crossed this threshold from my known world into this unknown world. And long story short, it was only meant to be for 2 weeks, and I ended up living there for like 6 months, ice fishing, like learning how to preserve meats, and I was a vegan before this happened, right? Like, and it just felt like I had lost so much weight, and I was like with a big beard, and I've got these reindeer herders laughing at me, like, you know, and I've got all my plastic mountaineering equipment, and they're like, you need a reindeer rug, like, you're gonna freeze to death out there. It was like -30 degrees, and it was so cold some days that it felt like the blood blisters, like my feet were gonna crack or something. Like, it was and it was sort of in that space and using mythology to understand that I was accessing and remembering something that I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
And part of my story, I guess, was that I had to go on this big adventure. But in hindsight, looking back to that, we can access that space of remembering this ancestral knowledge wherever we are. That's the way that that story kind of starts. And through preserving fish skins, I started making leather because I'd run out of money. And so I made bracelets that I sold at Swedish folk music events out the front to pay. Yeah. I could make it back to Germany to fly back home to Australia.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's the short of it. There's so many other little adventures in there, but yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Did you speak Swedish, like, or did you learn it? Yeah.
Jag pratar lite svenska.
What does that mean?
It just like, yeah, I speak a little bit of Swedish, but a lot of Swedish people speak English.
Yeah.
You know, even in remote parts of Lapland, you know, I only had a few instances where I basically just had to use like almost sign language, you know, and pointing at things. And
sure. That's awesome. While you were up there, were you like living with a community or were you just like out there by yourself?
So I guess I spent pretty much 3 months solo hiking.
Wow.
And that was camping in a tent. And that was about 450 Ks on foot through ice. So, and that was on a trail called the Kungsleden, which translates to the King's Road. And then through that path, I met this old lady that was like a, they call it like a stugvorden, which is like a hut guard. And she said, look, if you come back here after you finish your trip, you can stay here in the off-peak season. And I didn't realize that this would lead me to meeting a traditional reindeer herding family.
Wow.
Help look after the children and learn, you know, a bit of language, these traditional skills. And that kind of blew this whole world of, I guess, ancestral knowledge open for me.
So, that's incredible that you got to spend time with that family. That must... like how insane that you just managed to come across them on your journeys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And it wasn't something that I was actively seeking, you know. Yeah. I think that for me felt really important, not to just try and impose, I guess, you know, trying to find that knowledge, is just going out there and being open, you know, to discovery.
Yeah, that's cool. And I love how you tied that all in with the your interest in mythology and reconnecting to your kind of ancestral remembering. I really love that concept and that idea. Yeah, that's awesome. So once you got back to Australia, what did that journey look like? Integrating, you know, that whole journey and all the things that you experienced, what did you start doing when you got back here?
Well, often they, well, if I can quote Joseph Campbell, he says, you know, it's hard enough going on the big journey that you're on.
Yeah.
It's even harder when you make these discoveries, or, you know, what he calls boons or elixirs. The hardest part is called the return.
Yeah.
It's returning back to your known world with these new discoveries, and you're excited and you're like, I can't wait to just tell the whole world about this, you know. And and of course, you know, I fly my broke ass to New Zealand.
Yeah.
I had to stay with my cousin to help, like, he said he would pay me to do some basic renovations on his house.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, I'm broke again, and I've like I'm like painting this house, and it just felt like a distant dream. I was like, what the hell just happened, you know? And here I am, like, broke and, like, painting this house, you know? And then I was like, I can't go back to my hometown. Like, my whole life has changed.
Yeah.
And so I was really fortunate that I flew into Melbourne, and a good friend was living on a community in the Yarra Valley, and another good friend who owned the property had set up an intentional community off the back of a natural building workshop, and they were experimenting with different styles of building. And I was like, great, well, I'll bring the tanning.
Yeah.
And yeah, 2 years I was, you know, living on $5 a day and gardening and tanning and sitting in the bush, meditating, and, you know, really, I would call it integration.
Yeah.
You know, like after a big journey like that, I just needed space to integrate.
Yeah.
And in a way, I mean, that was probably 5 years ago now. I feel like only in the last couple of years, I feel like somewhat integrated. Like that's how profound it was.
Yeah, like, interesting. Such an experience that you had to integrate for so long.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we live in a world now, I guess, at least in the Western world, where these sorts of ancestral skills, I mean, we don't really have the language or the framework or the understanding that helps to support those, well, what I would call really core human skills.
Yeah.
So, so trying to integrate that in a structure that doesn't support that has been a really difficult experience. I don't know if you've had a similar...
Yeah, I've definitely had similar experiences. The time that I spent up in Arnhem Land with the Yolngu, it was extremely hard moving out of that space and coming back to this world, where it just felt like there was so much disconnection. It gave me a whole new perspective on the amount of disconnection in the Western world, or in the world that I live in the modern world, that I'd kind of been blind to before I actually went up there. So yeah, that's, I can totally relate to that. That's very, very interesting. And I can only imagine that would be amplified considering the amount of time that you spent up there. Like I was only up in Arnhem Land for like 10 days. So the amount of time that you're in Lapland would have been like a massive integration process coming back here.
Yeah. And also, like even short amounts of time, I mean, I think time does, you know, add a factor, but also, you know, sometimes we can have, I believe, profound experience even in short time as well. Like I don't want to 10 days, you can still have a totally life-changing experience. So just because I spent 6 months, I mean, the exposure definitely gives the possibility for, you know, more experiences. But at the same time, the quality of those experiences, I think, you know,
is what matters. Yeah, totally. Yeah, for sure. Did you feel like you got to adequately like share those stories of that experience when you came back? Because I know that's been I think it's a really important thing of going out on these journeys, being able to like share the excitement and the gold that we bring back from them. And it can sometimes be hard in a culture that doesn't really get it. Did you find it was easy going to that community and sharing your tanning skills? Did you also find it was, you were able to share those stories?
Yeah, I guess that witness it, like, yeah, when you explain that, the concept I understand is like this kind of witnessing on the return. And I was really fortunate. I mean, initially I felt like almost alien when I was, you know, flying back on this plane and I land and I'm in a suburban environment and I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And but I was really fortunate that I have some really close friends that I was able to sit with, and they were able to listen to my story. And I think what enabled me to have that conversation more was the skills that came from the experience. So the tanning and leather crafting, like I was pulling these skins out and I was crafting with my friends, and in a way I was able to tell my story through my body and my movement.
Yeah.
Because I felt like language couldn't quite capture, you know, it's like these limiting words. It's like, here, I'll show you, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So I was just making lots of fish skin bracelets with people.
You know, so
they could feel the movement of the materials in their hand. And that, in a way, is a way of carrying knowledge is through that, those movements, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I totally resonate with that. It's sometimes words reduce the experience in many ways. And we have to be like, we have to show it through demonstration or just through doing and practice.
Yeah.
That's great that you were able to share those skills that you learned. I'm curious, where did you take that over the next couple of years? Like in terms of tanning and those skills that you had, how have you brought that into, you know, your life now?
Yeah, life now. Wow. Okay. So I guess another part of my life journey has been more in the conventional, like, streams of study. Like I've done, you know, an undergrad in health science and a master's in public health, and I'm doing another master's at the moment in social work, to gain, I guess, a therapeutic qualification to be able to work one-on-one and in group settings. So to be able to design health programs and also be able to work on the ground implementing them in a public health setting. So working in mainstream health.
Yeah.
And then on this other hand, these profound practices in ancestral movement. And the last sort of 2 years, I guess I've been trying to bring those two worlds together.
Yeah.
And I really resisted this public health world because I could see a health system that's broken. It's built on a deficit that feeds on sick people for GDP, like for economic growth. And so it just felt counterintuitive to work in a system that that is almost at the extreme other end of what natural movement and those ancestral practices offer, which is all about preventative health.
Yeah. You know?
Like those movements for our organs. And I mean, you probably know a bit more about this than I do with the wild movement and ancestral movement, but they're really centered in preventing health issues from occurring.
Yeah.
We work in a disease model, which is about curing things when things fall off the wagon.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Without asking, why did they fall off the wagon?
Yeah. Well, it's like, well, we haven't got time to ask those questions.
Yeah.
we've just got to put the vaccines out. And, you know, I saw a brilliant, like the memes that are getting around, and some of them are hilarious. And one of the best memes I saw that captured the paradigm that we're living in our health system is the germ theory. And it was like a dirty tank with a fish in it.
Yeah.
And it just said, make vaccines, and then a clean tank with a fish in it. And it's called terrain theory, which is clean the tank.
Yeah, totally. I love that. That's great.
I was like, yeah. I'll have to send it to you, but it just really simply highlighted that we're so focused on trying to fix at the individual level that we forget about our connection to a broader ecosystem and how we move in these ecosystems and how we relate to them.
Yeah.
I really believe that our relationship to nature is also a reflection of our nature the nature of our relationship to ourselves.
Sure. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. How do you see us creating that relationship in the modern world if someone's listening and they have no relationship or no connection to nature? How do we start to reintegrate that connection and bring back some of these skills and practices?
I think we've really lost the art of listening.
Yeah.
And I would be careful not to, I think if you're listening to this right now and going, wow, this is all sounding great, what do I do? In our busier and busier lives, I think just creating the space that you're able to sit back and observe what's going on around you. I think a lot of the things that you and I are talking right about right now start to reveal themselves, you know, in their own ways.
Yeah.
But when we're so distracted by, you know, our screens and, you know, consuming everything. I mean, unfortunately, we live in an ideology where, you know, if we all stop consuming, that it would fall apart, you know. So it's kind of, it's a deficit ideology. It's like, you're never good enough. You'll never be good enough. So keep consuming. So, and so all I would invite whoever's listening is to try and, you know, create a bit of a space so that you can sit back and observe what, you know, what is going on in your life and around you. And obviously, like I'm on 16 acres here, almost in the bush, and, you know, maybe some of your listeners are, you know, in apartment buildings or wherever. So you might just find a comfy chair in your lounge room and just sit down and allow yourself just some space to observe the place that you're in. You know, how do you feel in your body? Like, I think we've lost this, like, remembering what it's like to inhabit our own bodies.
Yeah.
We're constantly up here.
Yeah.
Our minds.
Yeah.
And maybe you found this through your practices, but you start to feel more and more at home in your own body.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, we seem to have lost that sense of connection to our bodies and the space that we're in. I love that point you touched on of just creating space, because there's so much busyness in our lives. There's hardly any space for us to just sit back, observe, and just watch and just be. Like,
exactly. And and also being with ourselves, and because I think, you know, from that, like, looking at these ancestral movement skills, I know they can be confronting, because if we're not taught how to be in our bodies, you know, we can just live, you know, I guess, so disconnected. So to start to reconnect is just like a gentle, you know, creating that space to remember. Like, I love the word remember, because we're remembering our own bodies back.
Yeah.
Calling ourselves back.
Yeah, I love that.
And so to link it with the tanning especially is only one of so many different ways of moving your body. But because it's such an ancient movement of scraping your skin and of being outside, and the sequence of movements force me to really concentrate and remember, you know, you can't rush tanning. Like, it's a process that can take days. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I was just talking to a friend this morning about that, and how when you're just comparing, like, gyms and moving out in nature, it's like when you're out in nature, you can't be thinking about anything else. You have to be paying attention, because otherwise you might trip and fall or hurt yourself. But it's like in a gym, if you're running on a treadmill, you can just kind of switch off mentally. And it sounds like you're talking about the same thing with tanning, is like you have to be in the moment. You have to be present when you're doing that skill. And it seems that all of these ancestral skills, that's the common theme, is a sense of presence and mindfulness. Yeah.
Absolutely. And on presence, I mean, I was just talking about presence. I've got a couple of new people who have moved onto the property, and they wanted to have a go at tanning. And, you know, I was showing them how to scrape the skin, and I was trying to explain the processes to them. And they're like, oh, so what's the next process? Like, you know, once you've scraped the skin, how do you get it, like, soft? And I said, oh, well, you start softening it when the skin's not wet and it's not dry.
Yeah.
And it's like this this in-between window where things happen, and the only moment that we can ever act from, you know, is the present moment. And so without going into a deep philosophical story about tanning, I think, you know, when I've done these skills, whether it's, you know, I'm talking about tanning, but I can think of other ancestral skills that I've learnt that really connect you to that present awareness.
Yeah.
Because if you're not present or aware, you know, you miss that window, and then that skin goes really stiff. And you go, oh, why didn't that work? And it's like, because you weren't aware.
yeah, totally. You weren't paying attention in that moment.
Yeah, you're thinking you're off somewhere else, you know. And yeah,
it's so easy in the modern world to be distracted by all these different things, and our mind gets pulled in so many different directions. Like, I can relate that to a story when I was up in Arnhem Land. The way that they have their language, they very rarely will set a time to do something. Like, we would often ask them, oh, when are we going hunting, or when's this thing happening? And they would simply reply with yalala, which means later. So they wouldn't say tomorrow. It could, like, later could literally mean 5 minutes or like 3 days from now, but they didn't have like we're going at 1 p.m. tomorrow, because they were so in the present that they just knew when the time to go would be. And they didn't have to like put a time and a date on it. And I think that's really fascinating and just kind of links to that story that you shared with the tanning.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I can link that into the health stuff that I've been working on, because I think the linkage is just so important, particularly, you know, well, you know, these ancestral skills, they were in the past. What have they got to do with today's modern world? And I think they've got everything to do with today's modern world. I actually think that they are more relevant now than they've ever been.
Yeah, and, interesting.
And I can say that based on the fact that, you know, say mental health, like the rise in mental health has just exponentially increased, like almost taking over from physical health, like cardiovascular disease being such a big issue. And so, and because I work in the mental health space, particularly with young people, I can see statistically over time that it's not getting better. Like, mental health is really taking over now. How that relates to the ancestral skills and this presence is that in the modern world that we've kind of created, and that busyness that we were talking about before, we're overburdening our minds, and by practicing these ancestral skills and forcing us, like, it almost forces you to become present, because just trying to actively be present using your mind is almost a self-defeating task.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to use your mind to get into your body, and it's like you can't think your way out of a problem that you thought yourself into.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. It's like, it seems that that's a lot of what meditation culture is based around, is like trying to force this state of mindfulness. And I see there's value in it for sure, but sometimes just like going out and like practicing tanning or moving your body in nature, that's immediately you switch into this state of mindfulness. It's super fascinating, and I love that perspective that you offer, is like, just do the thing and then you'll be mindful, rather than like, I have to force mindfulness now. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So that's kind of what you're doing in terms of this health work, is bringing these rewilding and nature connection concepts into people with mental health issues. Is that how I'm understanding it correctly?
Yeah, well, basically, I guess particularly over the last year and a half, the sort of window between ancestral skills and the public health world has been a modality called Bush Adventure Therapy. And I hadn't heard of Bush Adventure Therapy until a friend of mine introduced it to me through, it was like bush art in adventure therapy. So like doing, using nature to create art for therapy.
Yeah.
And that was like a offshoot of this Bush Adventure Therapy. It's called BAT. There's, you know, if listeners are listening to this and they want to look it up, there's an Australian Association for Bush Adventure Therapy, so ABAT.
Wow.
And that connects to a larger global movement called Adventure Therapy.
Yeah.
And so the stuff that we've been talking about, and there's all these different programs, but they all relate to the same things that we've been talking about, that, you know, that nature connection for well-being, for mental health. And well, that's what I'm particularly interested in, is the mental health side of things, but also for physical well-being. And so I went to the International Adventure Therapy Conference at Stanwell Tops about a year and a half ago, and basically had my world blown apart. I was like, you're kidding me. There are practitioners around the world working in public health or health settings, that are utilizing nature for well-being and therapeutic benefit. Like, where do I sign up? You know,
yeah, that's awesome.
it's still a, even though it's a global community, it's still a modality that's not well known.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of research there, and yeah, particularly around mental health and the restorative qualities of nature. Like the Japanese have done some incredible research into forest bathing.
Yeah.
And what they call Shinrin-yoku. Just like the effects of, like, when you're doing your body movement outside and these trees are emitting, like, basically oils.
Yeah.
Breathing those oils in, and they're helping to regulate your nervous system.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, that's so fascinating.
So it's like, and that's just one little, like, slither of the...
Yeah, the whole picture.
The whole picture, yeah. And because the neurobiology stuff that's coming out at the moment is fascinating, on how our nervous system works, and because we're often a relaxed but alert nervous system is a nervous system that's functioning correctly.
Yeah. Like,
you shouldn't be, you know, closed in your body and like almost half asleep, because you're kind of in a hypo
state
of arousal, but then you shouldn't be hyper vigilant, like eyes almost popping out of your head, like, you know, someone's gonna give me the virus, like, you know. Yeah. And because that constant cortisol and like pumping of adrenaline in the nervous system isn't good. It will wear and tear on your organs. And also sitting, like, you know, sitting in a chair for 8 hours a day. I remember my professor telling me that'll be the next cigarette issue. And she said it was equivalent to smoking 2 packets of cigarettes a day. And no matter how much exercise you try and do, you're still doing irreversible damage to your organs, which later in life you'll pay dearly for. So,
yeah, I've heard that before. Like, even if you're doing like 2 hours of exercise a day, if you're still sitting for 8 hours a day, it's like, doesn't really matter how much exercise you do, it's still going to be damaging your body.
Yeah. So this, you know, Move Wild stuff that you're doing, Jake, like, is just so right on, like, forefront of where health health is, like, that's that's what we're needing. And I think obviously the tanning stuff, I feel like is a medium by which, you know, it could be lots of different mediums to addressing this massive disconnect
of
what it means to naturally be in the world.
For sure. Yeah, it seems that we're just at we have a massive biological mismatch with the modern world, and all these different, you know, mental health problems and physical health problems simply come from the fact that our body and our mind wasn't designed to, you know, sit in a chair for 8 hours or look at a screen for, you know, 8 hours a day and all these different things. And it can simply be, you know, reversed by going out into nature, forest bathing, as you say, moving our bodies, practicing these skills like tanning, because that's what our body is used to. And it's, you know, it's fascinating to hear that the oils, you know, from trees regulate our nervous system. But it's like, when you think about it, it's like, oh, who would have guessed? Like, we kind of evolved in those environments. So it makes total sense.
Absolutely. And, you know, and also the problem with inflammation in joints and that, and wearing rubber-soled footwear is another, you know, really simple. I'm probably not telling, like, a lot of listeners probably, you know, oh yeah, of course bare feet is better, but like for regulation and you know, yeah, like, where being in contact with the earth is something that our physiology has evolved with for hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah.
And in the last, what, 100 or so years, you know, going from like 98% of our time in contact, you know, direct contact with soil and the earth, to now the complete opposite, you know, in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the consequences of that disconnect. And
it seems, and we've also kind of been fed an ideology, it seems, that we are separate from nature. I'd like to get your thoughts on, like, why people see themselves as separate from nature and how we can start to bridge that gap between humans and nature.
That is a really juicy question. I think if I can turn to mythology for a second, because I like using story where possible, just to avoid complex language.
Yeah, I love story, so share away. Yeah.
Well, it's a story where a lot of us are familiar with, but, you know, the idea of the Garden of Eden and the fact that we've been cast out of the Garden of Eden, you know, this sense of falling away from, and that has a deep implication, you know, of separation and this sinning. And it's like we're born sinful and we're disconnected from the garden. So already on a deeply storytelling level, we get the echoes of these mythologies and resulting religions, you know, are still playing out these stories today, you know. And there's other, you know, other cultures and civilizations where they don't have this idea of being cast out of their Garden of Eden. You know, they're still very much in connection and have their rituals and movements and practices. So I think that disconnection is also related to the way that we tell stories and you know, how we're connected culturally as well. So
yeah, I like that. So we almost have to tell a new story, it sounds like, of as humans being part of nature rather than separate.
Yeah, so I think picking up those old, what seem like irrelevant mythological stories. I mean, Simon de Ker, from Ancestral Movement, he was saying, you know, we're myth-telling creatures. And I also believe that we're not only myth-telling creatures, but we're also living myth.
Yeah.
Everything we're doing is telling a story. Like right now, us connecting is all about, you know, I'm telling my story to you, and you're reflecting your parts of your story to me. And what kind of story are we telling? And I don't think it's so much, maybe we're telling old stories in new ways.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of telling old stories in new ways, and like using new language and giving it a new context, but really it's the same recurring theme, it seems like. I really enjoy that. I'm reminded of a podcast that I recently listened to with this guy who's all about mythology, and he was saying how in most Indigenous cultures, they have this recurring theme of a story where there was once a time where like the animals and the humans were kind of the same, or they all spoke the same language. And he was relating that and saying that is actually their way of communicating that time is right now if you tap into the present. Just what you were sharing then around mythology, it reminded me of that, and I really like that idea of story and having and the stories that, like, it's something to consider for people listening. What are the stories that we have been told as a society that have led us to this point, to, you know, being, you know, to worshipping consumerism and technology and all these different parts of our society and how they operate? That's all based on story. I really like that insight that you share with that.
I just think, like, it's funny that we've ended up, you know, at this point in the conversation. Like, it seems like all roads lead back to to us being these storytelling creatures, and I guess to land it in the framework that we're discussing around, you know, movement and rewilding. I guess the way that we are, like, you know, our hands, for instance, I believe, are these tools by which, you know, we can craft the physical nature of the story, but what we create in itself tell story as well. So the way we, and maybe not just hands, but if I expand on that, it's also how you're moving your body is also telling a story, you know. And I invite whoever's listening is to be aware of, well, what story is your, if your body could tell a story, what story is your body telling?
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, I love that idea of we're creating the story in the moment, like every moment, like no matter what we're doing, whether we're conscious of it or not, we are creating and reinforcing a story for not only others to see, but ourselves. Like we internalize that story and then we start repeating it as well, and that becomes us. It's really fascinating.
And you know, and even, you know, reflecting on that question, I invited people to think about, you know, sometimes, you know, my story is one where I am outside and scraping hides and feeling that, you know, connection to my people and to people that I can feel, but I don't know who they are. And other times, you know, I'm staring into my screen and then catching myself and going, oh wow, I totally lost the present moment, you know, and I'm just falling into this trap of living somewhere else.
Yeah, for sure. So what, you mentioned Australian Bush Adventure Therapy. Are you currently doing work with them in Australia, or what's the work that you're doing right now?
Yeah, so currently I work for an integrative hospital service in the Colac Otway Shire, so sort of south west of Melbourne, about an hour and a half.
Nice.
And we service about 30,000 people, and my job's really to design and implement preventative health programs. And so the bush adventure therapy stuff, I've linked in with professionals in that field who have basically helped to mentor and train some of our clinicians out here on, you know, where do you even start with bush adventure therapy? So I initially designed a program, you know, it was way too big too quickly, like a 12-day immersive expedition style program.
Nice.
Because I was like, you know, it's got to be more than 7 days because it takes 3 days for the mask of the persona to dissolve. And, you know, I went way too deep. And the clinicians who were supporting the program, so these are psychologists and social workers, they said, look, we don't even have the confidence to go into nature with our clients. Like, we want to know what we can do. So we had to scale it back to what we call walk and talk sessions.
Yeah.
So just counseling outdoors, you could call it. And I've been really fortunate to have a couple of mentors in bush adventure therapy who are very, I guess, very involved in the Australian Bush Adventure Therapy Network. And and now I'm trying to set up a placement to work in the policy team.
Yeah.
Because I want to push the work in a way that is obviously going to best support the work into the mainstream. So the ideas that we're talking about today, Jake, aren't like seen as alternative, but actually fundamental.
Yeah.
Health.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome work, because it is so fundamental to human health, but a lot of the health system seems to have forgotten that, or disregards it as alternative or as woo-woo or whatever. But it's like, it's so common sense when you think about it, really.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and even speaking to some of my older family members, and their concerns about the younger generations, and how they're like, I can't understand why everyone's so busy.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, why don't you go and spend time with your family? And, you know, I mean, that's maybe a silver lining to this virus, is that it's really forced people to slow down.
Yeah. Now,
there's no doubt a lot of people will be suffering through this forced quarantine, but I think slowing down and that connection, I mean, it's not long ago that, you know, it feels like a relatively new phenomena. Like, it's...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting how things shift so quickly and we forget what our world used to be like. And then, and we normalize this world that we're in. Like, a lot of people have normalized the modern world and just think, don't really consider what our history as humans have been. And then we end up getting all these ailments, like physical and mental health issues, and we can't contextualize it because we're like, well, this is just normal. Like, why am I getting sick? But it's like, no, you're living in like a kind of messed up world. Like, it's not natural.
So that's why this work, this wild movement work, is just it's very critical. And I think it's only a field that is just gonna keep expanding.
Yeah, I hope so.
the biomedical model has it's hit its peak, and that's why we're seeing you know, these real spikes in unnecessary disease and trauma. And I think that's why people who are conventionally trained in various health modalities are really starting to branch out, you know. Yeah, and
for sure.
When I brought up bush adventure therapy at my organization, I thought I was only going to train 2 people, and suddenly there was nearly 20 people like in this room all going, you know, we are desperate to find other ways of working that's not just based on the mind.
Yeah.
You really have to start making that mind-body connection and thinking more preventative rather than talking about it, is what can we do to actually move into that space?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That's great. And are you still doing work with the bush tannery and tanning stuff? Is that still something that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had to scale back the amount of workshops
I
offer. So now I just get emails all the time about when's the next workshop. And so I'm offering, the occasional workshop, but really my focus now is on, how does tanning, leather crafting, and these nature-based creative expressions work in a public health context.
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm putting a lot of my energy. I'm doing a lot of my own home tanning, and because I don't need to rely on the tanning business to drive an income, I've been just diving deeper in the underlying processes.
Right. Cool.
And going to places that I don't think I could have gone if I had to focus on tanning making me money.
Like, yeah.
And because I think a lot of these ancestral skills, when you put a business lens on them, I mean, some people make it work, don't get me wrong. I think it's possible to make ancestral skills, into a business opportunity. If that's the calling that, you have. But for me personally, it was, it actually put more constraint on them because I had, produce X number of this to create.
It's almost kind of incompatible, like the consumer-based mindset and just the practice of ancestral skills, and the fact that those skills are innate to us as humans. And we would have possessed those skills naturally in a natural environment. And it's an interesting contrast, I guess, that the business model and then ancestral skills, they kind of match sometimes, but also sometimes they don't.
Yeah, I think it's sort of how it's done. And maybe I was trying to make items that I would sell out of the skins that I would turn into leather and leather product. And that's probably why I ended up focusing more on the workshops and the sharing of knowledge, because I didn't really have enough of using business language here, but like a consumer base that could even understand what it was that I was creating.
Yeah.
Because we've got so much of that. Like the people who are buying my products were the ones that understood how much knowledge and sustainability and all of these principles were embodied in that product.
Yeah, for sure.
But in a disconnected world where somebody, probably wouldn't know what a cut of meat, like where that meat even came from.
Yeah.
Or wouldn't be able to witness the death of an animal, to understand the complexity of transforming a skin into a versatile textile.
Yeah.
So that's why I focus more on the training and now on the health and well-being of ancestral skills. So I'm going to be working hopefully for the next, from July, hopefully I'll be working for 6 months in the policy team, and who knows where that might go.
Yeah, that's exciting. Hopefully we can change some stuff within the organization and get things rolling in terms of bringing in those ancestral skills. That's really great work that you're doing. Yeah, that's so cool to hear. So yeah. We'll start to wrap it up. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we finished?
I'm just trying to think in terms of your listeners. I don't know, is there anything that you're thinking of, Jake? That
yeah, I think we've touched on most of the things. You could go more in depth on like how you see humans playing a role in the natural ecosystem. I know you touched on that a bit, but maybe you could give a bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, where do humans fit in the ecosystem? One point that I do really want to make is this really being careful of not falling into the trap of seeing humans as a virus or cancer on the earth. I really, that's something that I've been seeing popping up.
Yeah.
And in terms of where our place in the ecosystem, like if there's one take-home message for your listeners and maybe you,
if yeah.
I don't think this will be news for you, but like we are nature. Like, you know, we are born, not we don't come to the earth, we are born from the earth.
Yeah.
We are the earth having a conversation about itself right now. And you may have heard this idea that, you know, we are nature defending nature.
Yeah.
And so where do we fit? Well, we fit right wherever you are right now.
Yeah. That's I love that. That's the best answer that I've heard yet. That's awesome. That's so good. Yeah, I love that idea and I totally agree with you. We are nature, and it's, yeah, the more that we can bring ourselves back to that awareness and that understanding, I think the better our world will be. So yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely, Jake. Oh, it's so such a pleasure to come on your podcast. And
yeah, absolutely. So where can people connect with you and find out more about your stuff?
Yeah, so I've got a website. So it's called thebushtannery.com.au. So they can go on there. It is does need a little bit of updating.
Yeah.
But if people are wanting to connect with me around ancestral skills, particularly tanning and leather crafting, but are also interested about the health and well-being benefits, there's a a contact us button on there, and
yeah,
that'll do you to send me an email.
Awesome.
And I'm also pretty active on the old Instagram.
Yeah, so great.
Feel free if there's any listeners to drop me a line on there or say hello or give us a follow. So
awesome. Yeah. Sweet. I'll link all that up in the show notes so people can get access and connect with you. Thank you so much, Josh, for coming on and spending the time and sharing all this. It was really great and enjoyable to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, same to you too, Jake. And best of luck.
See, what did I tell you? That conversation was rad. I hope you now feel empowered, inspired, and ready to reconnect and remember your place in nature. If you want to connect with Josh and find out more about what he's up to, all the links for that are in the show notes. Also, let us know what you thought of this show by taking a screenshot, sharing it, and tag us both with your key takeaways from today's conversation. If you're getting value out of the content I'm putting out there and you feel like you want to give back, then what you can do is subscribe, leave us a review, and share this podcast. The more people we get it out to, the better. It's not lost on me that this show wouldn't be possible without you guys as the listeners, so I can't thank you enough. But remember that in order to truly embody this stuff that we talked about today, you have to go out there and live it. So do that and let me know how you go. If you want to connect with me, Instagram is the best place. I'm found over at move_wild on Instagram. You can see there what I'm putting out and message me with any feedback, suggestions, or ideas for collaboration. I'm always open and would love to chat. So until next time, keep leading by example with all this stuff. Get outside, move wild, and keep doing all the rad, fun stuff that keeps us healthy and happy. Thanks for tuning in, guys.